fears of outbreak and government cover-ups are not just confined to movie scripts. A 2014 survey by two University of Chicago researchers found half of Americans subscribe to at least one medical conspiracy theory. Those beliefs actually have a powerful effect on how people take care of both themselves and their families. And here to talk about that is Sean Ritchie. He's a political science professor at Georgia State University. Good morning, Ed and Sean.
Good morning.
And also with us is Sinead Young. She's an associate professor of psychology at Morehouse College. Hi, Sinead.
Good morning.
So you're here to tell me why we believe this stuff when the facts conflict with it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So why?
So oftentimes people are trying to make meaning of the world around them, and we may not always have all of the evidence that supports valid claims.
Wait, this sounds like the beginning of Greek mythology.
It often is.
But what that it also holds true that when we see information that conflicts with what we believe, we still go with what we believe and not the facts. Why is that?
That is absolutely human nature. Often we have a belief system, and even when we have evidence of the contrary, it's really difficult to change those beliefs.
Okay, so let's talk about anti-vaxxing, since this is a pretty common problem. And Sean, do we have an idea of why anti-vaxxing is a modern problem?
Well, actually, there's a long history of it, and it goes back to the religious movements and so on. But the modern strain of the anti-vax movement is basically, it starts around, people often talk about a certain academic article that came out in
the one that's been debunked over and over and over.
But actually, it predates that and extends beyond simply the MMR vaccine to other vaccines, even including things such as the
measles, mumps, rubella.
Yeah, right, which is the main one that article focused on. But it also extends to even things along the influenza and other vaccines. And so the anti-vax movement is diverse, and there are diverse communities that believe in these ideas. But basically, that article was often looked at as a sort of starting point of the modern movement.
And Sinead, that article, again, has been debunked. The scientist behind it has been discredited. So why is it still alive?
Well, oftentimes you have celebrities and other individuals coming out who are not scientists who are still supporting these claims. And so individuals are not as...
Okay, but why do we believe the celebrity and not the scientist?
Well, that is a longer conversation. Why do celebrities hold more water in the society than our scientists? And I think we can really start with K-12 education and educating people about STEM and Congress as well.
Okay, so let's talk about, you go back in some of your research to things like the Tuskegee syphilis study. Tell me why that's relevant when we're talking about things like anti-vaccine. How do you connect those dots?
Sure, so the Tuskegee syphilis study is probably the most well-known example of medical abuse and unscrupulous researchers.
In which they injected people with syphilis.
So it's actually a fallacy where people were not injected, people actually had syphilis, and they studied the effects of syphilis on black males in Tuskegee, Alabama, and they compared them to populations who were white males. And the unethical piece of this came when a treatment for syphilis came out and the men were not given the treatment. And so oftentimes we cite this study as one of the early occurrences where unequal treatment was given to individuals, and people will often quote it, but often think that the men were injected with syphilis, and that's just not correct.
But you point to it as a beginning of distrust of authority figures and especially of government.
It's one of the most well-known, but it does date back further than Tuskegee, where during slavery we have something called night riders. And these are stories where people would go and into the slave quarters and use slaves for medical research.
So, Sean, then this distrust of government, can we trace that also with some of the conspiracy theories that half of Americans believe in?
Oh, yeah. That's actually in the statistical models that we've run in our various, academic journal articles and so on that we've done. This political distrust actually is one of the main predictors. And statistically, your views of government generally is one of the most strongest predictors of you holding anti-vax beliefs, particularly holding anti-vax behaviors, like actually not just sort of believing in it, but actually truly not vaccinating your children. Another thing that's interesting is that we found in other strands of our research is that there's multiple political conspiracies, such as Barack Obama not being born in the United States or George W. Bush somehow having knowledge of the 9/11 attacks. These are called birtherism and trutherism. In some of our recent research, we found that oftentimes people will believe in all of these theories. They'll be anti-vaxxers and birthers and truthers simultaneously, which would not make sense if it was some sort of political animus, but would make sense if there's some predisposition to having to holding conspiratorial beliefs.
So what he's talking about, that Sinead, is that it kind of sounds like we're talking about two different groups. There's one that are just prone to believe in conspiracy theories, right?
Right.
And then there's people who just distrust authority figures.
Correct. And then sometimes those groups do converge.
And that they converge at medical conspiracy theories.
Absolutely.
But this is upsetting, Sean, because what you're saying implies that as Americans' opinion of Congress goes lower, and I don't know that it can go all that much lower, they're less likely to believe the CDC, for example?
Right. And one of the interesting things we found from our research is that a traditional approach to something like this would be to apply more and more credentials when you speak and to communicate. Well, I'm this expert that's evolved with this important institution, and I graduated from these
multiple PhDs.
And what we found is the more credentials you add, the more you're signaling to these groups that you're a part of the establishment that's oppressing them, or the way they view it as some sort of oppressive force. And so that the more credentials you add, actually the more you're sort of, it in a sense, backfires, because you're more signaling to them that that you are the part of the group that they don't like, that they don't trust.
This is also complicated, and either of you can take this. It's complicated by people like, say, Dr. Oz, who put forth claims which are not medically proven and, in fact, sometimes are medically false. And so, as you say, this is somebody with very credible credentials who is then saying to them something to them that can't be trusted. How does that complicate the belief in conspiracy theories?
I think it goes back to my earlier point. Dr. Oz is a celebrity, so he's in our houses every day, and we trust him and we see him. And so oftentimes we have more exposure to Dr. Oz than our primary care physicians.
So then, Sean, then what about insurance companies, which are private? Does that also feed into people's distrust?
Well, certainly attitudes towards these things also correlate with suspicion over, for example, the Affordable Care Act and these kinds of things, the expansion of government involvement in healthcare. If you don't trust government, then that actually sort of feeds into this. But I think I wanted to sort of add on to what was being said previously. This also points to a potential solution to this, is if you can find some person that has legitimacy within these different groups, it could be a celebrity or something like this, but what that really amounts to is they have trust in that celebrity. They don't trust.
Wait, so we need a medical version of Bill Nye or Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Something like that. That people actually, someone that they, for whatever reason, can communicate with them. And actually, in some of our research, we've looked at parents and basically social network members, so that they don't trust the medical authorities, but they may trust someone. They might have legitimacy within their social network. And so we tried to actually give information about vaccines through social networks, and that seemed to be somewhat effective.
Sinead, you were going to add to that.
Yeah, so I think as researchers and healthcare providers, we often have to get into the community. So I think that it's important that the community trust us, and this is why Tuskegee was so successful, because the methods that they used for that study was to use community workers and really do outreach and care for the individuals above and beyond just the study. And so they gained the trust of those individuals in the study, and that's what we need to do through community-based research and healthcare.
Is there always going to be a certain number of Americans that believe medical conspiracy theory, Sean?
There always has been. Like I said, it goes back to...
Not worse now than it has been in the past?
Oh, it's worse now, yeah.
Oh.
And what's interesting is that even if you look at it sort of survey data, you would think that something like the measles outbreak, which was very well covered at Disneyland a few years ago, you would think something like that would be sort of this watershed moment that would change these people's attitudes.
The reason you think that is because doctors said if you do not have herd immunity, people are going to get the measles, and then we didn't have herd immunity and people got the measles.
Right. Yeah.
So why didn't that have that effect?
Well, we probably still have herd immunity, but basically what happened there was the sort of younger children aren't able to get the vaccine up until like sort of 18 months and this kind of thing. And so there are other people. We're probably not at a level where we've lost herd immunity yet, but it's a dangerous level. And anyway, the point is that we do have people that aren't vaccinated and then they were able to get it. And so, but you know, why that didn't do it is because maybe people distrust the information that the media is providing them. Maybe they don't believe this is effective, or maybe they simply believe that the risk of autism is greater than the risk of getting the measles.
Okay, so we got to wrap up here, but I want to keep track. They don't trust the government. They don't trust doctors. They don't trust me as the media, but they'll trust celebrities. Great. Sean Ritchie is a political science professor at Georgia State University. Sinead Young is an associate professor of psychology at Morehouse College. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.